Whoa. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm just taking pictures of the audience. I used this joke this morning. What I do with all these pictures if everyone just keeps very still and tries to fake a smile, that's close enough, I'll take that. I use them to create a panorama, which I then put on my blog. How many folk here have been to robmiles.com? Yay, more than one. That's good. You see, I take all the pictures, I combine them into a panorama, and then I can say, I've had all the audience in stitches. Okay, right, fine, right. Not everyone's going to be a winner, Rob. I'll just take one more picture, and then we'll get on with the fun stuff. Okay. Right. Well, thank you all for coming. I'm the after-dinner speaker. Hoping you've had dinner, otherwise that joke doesn't work at all. And it isn't a joke, so there you are. Right, okay. So from me, you are going to get. Well, first I want to ask you some questions. How many people here are Windows Phone developers? We have a few. How many people here have written a program for Windows Phone? Okay, how many have written a game? How many can spell XNA? It's a trick question. Oh, getting better. Do you know what XNA stands for? XNA stands for XNA is not an acronym, which is a kind of computer science joke, which just sort of isn't funny. So there you go. So what you're going to get from me, I've been using the same joke every week when my demos fail, and I've been using it a lot. I did a demo. Don't talk to me about Connect. It's not. No, it's. How many folk here were here at Geek Night last night? Yeah, wasn't that fun? I did the session this morning, and everything worked fine, apart from the kiss detector, where we couldn't find any volunteers. It's not surprising. So yes, yesterday I'd rather not discuss, but today we're going to have fun. It's all going to work. I'm going to give you a quick look at what. My God, that's me. One of my best tweets ever so far this week is someone put, "Doesn't Rob Miles look like Captain Slow?" And I thought, "Oh, thanks for that. I wonder how he feels." If you watch Top Gear, you'll know what that means. If you don't, then don't bother looking. Okay, you're going to get. Why can't I see the back of my head? If I go real fast, could I? No, let's not try that either. Makes my head come off. Look at XNA, get an idea of how. The idea is I wanted to show you a trajectory. I could write a game and publish it in 75 minutes, but it would just be like a frantic blur. So what I want to do is I want to show you the process by which you're going to go through to both build the game and then get it out there. And I'm a recreational coder, okay? I write programs for fun. I put things together to see what they can do, and every now and then I end up with a product or an idea or a thing. And the weird thing for me, because I put a few things out in Windows Phone Marketplace, is the biggest selling, well, selling is the wrong word. I've had the most downloads of a thing which I just had an idea for driving to work in the car. And it's took me my lunch hour to create and publish, and I've had more people loading that and using it than any other game. Or anything else I've written, which I've sweated over for long periods of time. So the idea with this tool chain is it can put you in a position where if you have that idea, the next thing you can do is pick it up and run with it. And it gives you a deployment chain and all the tools and a test chain and everything else. And what I want to get you into a place where you can go, hey, I could do this. Now, I have got 80 slides. Whoa! And I'm going to make you look at all of them. But I'm going to whiz through them fairly quick. But don't worry, because if you go to my world-famous blog, or it's famous in my world, which is robmiles.com, then I'll put all the slides and everything I show you in code form on there as well. You can take it away and run with it. So everything you see, you're going to get copies of if you want to. And I want you to be in a position where if you go, oh, wouldn't it be neat if I could make a thing which did this, to be able to sort of create that thing and then publish it. And see how you go and make a name for yourself. I did some talks to students earlier in the week, and I love doing students because that's my day job. And I was saying things like, it's part of brand building these days you have to regard yourself as a brand because you're not going to have the same job for life necessarily. So you have to have a way in which you can impress people and show what you're made of. And putting things in marketplace and app store and other places and blogging and putting things on tech forums and getting involved in writing, whatever else, that's all to do with building your brand. And that's the thing you'll carry around with you all through your life. So doing this kind of thing, I can't tell you it's going to make you rich because it probably won't. It might do, be nice if it did, but what I will say is that it will put you in a good position because it'll give you stuff that maybe the other three people in the room going for that job haven't got. A bit of track record, a bit of sort of extra stuff which puts you in the frame and where they can't get. And it's really important, I think, to do this kind of thing. And I regard putting stuff out there, showing that you like coding and taking ideas and making them run, which is all about what computer science and software development is for, in my opinion. If you're sure you're into that, then it's a good way of showing that off. So with that little message out of the way, let's have a look at XNA, okay? It's a game development platform that runs on top of the phone, and it runs very well on the phone. The phone's got good solid 3D hardware, and you can use all the hardware sensors. We'll explore some of those towards the end. I can tip the phone, I can touch the screen, and I can interact with the games or whatever I create in quite interesting ways. I've also got potential for networking because the phone is a very well-connected device, and I can link into Xbox Live and issue challenges to other gamers, do that kind of thing. And there's also support within your game for in-game advertising. So you can actually fund your development by putting ads in games rather than selling them. And that's actually one of our students came to see me last week. He's earning £3 a day from his game. And he's very pleased with this. And I'm not surprised. I mean, it's only a thing he wrote in a weekend and pushed out there. And every day you can have a cup of coffee, have a latte and go, that's my £3 for the day, clunk, and then move on. And so it is a way to get revenue, and it does work. So go with that. And so it's a nice platform. XNA gives you everything you need to get started. So you've got full content management. If you design your artwork, your sounds, your 3D models, whatever, you can do that. And you can write 2D sprite-based games, which are the kind of flat stuff, or you can write 3D games, I don't know, anything you like, really. You can put things in. I'm a 2D kind. I'm a very two-dimensional person, as you can probably tell. Yes. And so I write 2D stuff because pretty much the biggest selling game on the mobile platforms at the moment, Angry Birds, is extremely 2D. There's no 3D in there at all. And that's a very, very compelling game that works extremely nicely on the platform. That kind of thing you can make using the tools I'm going to show you today really quite easily. And so if you wanted to think in terms of producing those kind of games and things, one thing I will say, which is kind of like an important message, if you're working in a team to make something, see if you can find yourself a good graphic designer. Because these people are very useful. When I draw things, they look rubbish. But when graphic designers draw them, they look nice. And that's useful. So if you can find someone to sort of give your application and your project a bit of a graphical edge, then that really makes it stand out. This works for Silverlight apps in the marketplace, XNA, whatever you like. You start writing your code, you put in a bunch of placeholder graphics, and you develop the gameplay and hone that and polish that. And at the same time, the graphics guy is running alongside you, producing the assets. And when you put them together, really special things happen at that point. So if you don't know anybody that's in the graphic design side, then find someone to chum up with and actually do this kind of thing, because it's nice and it's very useful. Some of our students at Hull, where I work, can do both, and I hate them. He can draw and he can code. I hate him. We have these game development competitions where we lock the students in the department for 24 hours and make them produce a game pretty much from scratch. And they are becoming so popular, we're having to hold one every semester now. And the first one we did was called Destruction Golf. I'll show you that a bit later on. Now we're doing a thing called Three Thing Game, where we give them three things. And they have to make a game from them. And it's a good thing to do. I bought this set of, this is stupid, but it works, haiku dice. What a haiku is? One of these Japanese poems with words. Where you can get a set of about 60 dice with words on, which you throw on the floor. And you pull out the words to make a haiku. Okay, what's that got to do with games? Well, if you're stuck for ideas, lob a bunch of these things on the floor, pull out a few words that sound interesting, and try and make a game from them. We do that with the students. We give them three things, and they come in. And the winner of the first three-thing game produced warrior koalas on Mars. And it worked. There's a little koala running around with these things coming after him. And this year's winner was, what was it? It was Vampire Travel Lodge Ninja. So they had these guys going to this travel lodge, an English hotel chain. So they had these guys with suitcases walking towards the hotel and things going on. And they had a hamster in a graveyard was another one. And so just pick stuff out of the air and then give yourself some hooks and try and build it. And it works very well if you're stuck for ideas. If you're trying to think of things to do. That's kind of fun. Back to the plot. XNA is a good place to take those ideas and make them work. And it works like every other game engine in the universe and space. In that pretty much what happens is that the game starts up, we have our loading screen, we're always going to have those, it brings in the textures, the assets, the sound, all the other bits and pieces, and then once the textures are all in, and we're good to go, fast as we can, on the phone it's 30 times a second, we update the game world, and we draw the game world. So we have an update and a draw behavior, and these things are called for us by the game engine 30 times a second. And our job is to update the game world, so we move all the bullets and see if they've hit anything, and start off explosions and what have you if they have, or we move the car along the track, read the pedals, adjust the steering wheel, move all the other cars, etc. And at the same time, we also take that model and we render it. And we tear down the previous picture and build a whole brand new one every time, 30 times a second. And the good thing is the hardware is really good at this. And it will cope. And it works extremely nicely. So you've got this going. And as far as we're concerned, that's what we do. In terms of XNA, it's as simple as filling in three methods. Well, three and a half. I've got a very small spot. There it is. Initialize is called once to start things up. Load content. Oh, go back. Hold on there. Oh, okay. My clicker's misbehaving again. Load content fetches the assets. Update does the updating. And draw does the draw. So effectively, you fill these methods in and you get yourself a game. And that's how it works. There is no other magic than that. If you make a brand new game, which we shall do now, then you get yourself a big, shiny, empty project. And all you have to do in Visual Studio is go in there and fill in those methods. You can work in C#, or you can work in VB.net. Either will work. What I'm showing you is all C#, because C# is my favourite language in all the world and space. It's rather nice. But the APIs, the libraries, the assets, the way it works, is straight the same across VB. You can slide across and use that if you want. It's easy peasy lemons, as we say in the UK. So just fill the methods in, and you're good to go. Now, it's always important to start your development off with a really impressive piece of artwork. That's my smudge. Took me about 15 seconds to draw in Photoshop. One of my favourite jokes in the world. Do you know who does all the image processing in the jungle? Do you know this? It's Photoshop elephants. No? No? Right, fine. I'll cross that one off the list. And I'll try and keep moving forwards. But if you can't afford Photoshop, and not many people can, Paint.net. Anyone using Paint.net? It's a really good, free drawing program. And you can download it, and it's got transparency, it's got all the good stuff, and it's rather nice to work with, and it costs you nothing. The GIMP is also a good one, but that's a little bit harder to use, and the name seems a bit strange to me, but there you go. Maybe you have to wear a mask to use it. I've no idea. But anyway, I digress. I just made a smudge. We could put the spaceship or the rocket or the Pac-Man or the bird or the whatever we like in there later. The thing I want you to get from there, though, is it's got transparency. Around the edges, we've got the hash bit is actually the background showing through. So we've got a round object with transparency around the edges. You can use what you like. That's my smudge. And I'm going to use it as the basis of my sprites. And the whole, what I want to give you at the end of this is a view of my work in progress. I'm going to keep on with this till I've made something which is worthy of release. And I'm pretty close now. I've had a few ideas and played with a few things. I'm going to give you a sprite engine, which is a mechanism by which you can create sprites and give them life. And a sprite is effectively a texture and the position on the screen. And so we have this thing which can draw itself somewhere on the screen. And so that's where my starting point is. And I'm going to build a little class hierarchy of these things. And the idea is that you can then effectively, if you want a thing that chases the other player or runs away from them or bounces off the walls or drifts across like snow, then make a sprite that behaves that way. It's really very easy. And effectively, there are three things that a sprite does. He gets a reset at the beginning of the game, which puts him back to wherever he was. If he's the kind of sprite that gets shot at, then this will reset his number of lives. If he's the kind of sprite that lives in a certain place on the screen, it'll place him there as well, etc. That's what reset does. I don't actually use it. Why does it say... It should say sampler state. That's very odd. That should say smudge state. I do a smudge game. Well, that's changed. Very odd. Strange. Anyway, these three things are all passed a reference to the game that they're part of, so they can have an effect on it. So if you update your sprite and it gets killed by the player's missile, it can then call back to the game and give the player 5 points or a score or whatever, or it can flip the game state to game over. So these things are bound to the game they're part of and passed a reference to it so they can work with it. But there are the three fundamentals, and draw an update are the two that we'll look at. But before we do that, we'll see how we construct one. Now, I haven't put anything in the interface. This thing, by the way, if you're a C-sharp, you'll know all about these things. An interface is a lump of behaviours that an object can expose. And what this means is whatever else the class can do, if it implements iSprite, I can reset it, I can draw it, and I can update it. And that's it. In terms of making a new sprite, I made a constructor. And effectively, I feed the constructor a whole bunch of values. I feed it a reference to the parent game. I give it the texture to work with, its position, the color of the light I'm going to shine on it. Because one quite clever trick you can use, if you want to show, if you're firing missiles at a spaceship and the spaceship's heating up and taking damage, just change the draw color to add a bit of red. So you can have a spaceship that's one particular colour, or do it even grey if you like, and then shine a coloured light on and it'll appear that colour in the game. That's a quick and dirty way of getting graphical effects, and it's surprisingly effective. So that's my draw colour. That's a fraction of the width of the screen. Try and make your game dimensions independent of the actual platform, so the system will figure out how wide the screen is and then scale the sprite to make it a 20th of the width. And the final value, which I set at 0, is the rotation speed of the sprite. Sorry, the rotation of the sprite. And at the moment, it's upright. It's not spinning or anything. Okay, so that's how I make a sprite. I'll show you the constructor code in a minute or two, but there's nothing much to it. There's no more magic than that. This is the toughest slide in the presentation. I'll get it over with early. This is the draw method. The draw method's called by X and A 30 times a second. Bang, 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 bang. And every time it does it, it tells the sprite, hey, draw yourself. And this is what my sprite does. It says, okay, by the way, sprite batch, if you're interested, and if you're not, I suppose, sprite batch is a mechanism in the game which puts together a bunch of drawing operations. So the idea here is that because the GPU, which is inside the phone doing the drawing, and very good at that, you basically have to send it commands to make it do stuff. It's sensible to batch these up in one big transaction. And that's what sprite batch does. And so I'm going to do this for many hundreds of sprites, probably. And so I call the draw method, I give it the texture, tell it where to draw it. I use the whole of my smudge. If I want to, I can pull a particular rectangle out of the source image. Now that's useful. If you want to zoom in on a map, then what you do is you draw a really big map and then you just show a certain part of it by pulling a particular rectangle out. So that gives you like a zoom and a pan, which is quite useful. Or you can have a single frame that contains 5 or 6 different animated positions. If you had a walking sprite, you'll have 4 or 5 different images. Put them all in one big image and then cut out the appropriate piece each time. That's what that lets you do. And then you've got the colour we're drawing it with, how far it's rotated, and the position inside the sprite it rotates about. If I'm spinning this thing, I'll spin it about the midpoint, so it does that. And so what my little engine does is figures out the midpoint of the sprite and sets the origin to there so it spins and looks sensible. And then we're not going to flip it or invert it. That's none. And you can draw in XNA in different levels if you want and stack them all up like onion skins. I'm going to put them all at the same level, level one. So that's my draw thing. And it just does the behavior of the sprite. Again, don't worry. Nothing magical here. This isn't rocket science. This is just a bit of programming. Actually, I did this session in Paris in a theater. Not this session, a different one. And next door, the European Space Agency were having a bunch of lectures about something or other. And I was able to say, and I loved this, this is not rocket science because that's next door. And I thought it was great. It's one of, if my career has a highlight, that's probably it. Which tells you as much about me as you really want to know. And now we're going to move on. And so this is the easiest slide in the presentation because the update method does nothing. Does absolutely zippo nada. But it's virtual, which means that I can override it. And all my children will have update behaviors that make them do the thing they're supposed to do. If they're supposed to chase the rocket, they'll do that. If they're supposed to get bigger, they'll do that. If they're supposed to bounce off the edges, they'll do that. If they're supposed to fall down under gravity, they'll do that. And so this one's empty. It's a placeholder. We'll go back and fill them in later. And I'll really now, this is time, this is about the time in the presentation where we have to really impress the audience, Rob. So what I'm going to do is wonder where my taskbar has gone. Is it at the bottom? Okay, right, fine. Thank you. I'll have you back. There you go. And we'll go into the demos directory. And I'll go into Smudge Game. And I'll get hold of that. And I'll open it with the correct version of Studio. One other thing I'll make, which is very, very important. The entire tool chain I'm showing you is all the free stuff. This is my going out and about laptop. And there's nothing on here which is paid for. That didn't sound right. Everything, all the tool chains I'm using, I got either from the Express Editions of Visual Studio or create.msn.com for the phone toolkit. So it's all free stuff. There's my smudge in a PNG file, which I can just open up and show you in its graphical loveliness. Doesn't work too well in Paint, actually, so we'll get rid of that. And this is my game class. And if I open this up, make it a bit bigger so we can all see, then there's my smudge. There's my constructor, there's my initializer which does nothing, there's my loader which makes myself a sprite. And if I go back in here in my region, then there's the interface. This is the stuff that's held about the sprite, all the stuff it needs to know, and that's that big ugly draw method that we run. So fire this up and deploy it to the Windows Phone emulator, which will now start. Now notice it looks just like my phone. Now I really like that. I mean, it's completely and utterly irrelevant in that all Windows phones behave the same, but I find that kind of pleasing. If you want to do that and make your Windows phone development a bit more nice, there's a skin switcher, which I'll mention a little bit later, and that's my smudge, and it doesn't look quite right because it's wrong. It's blue, and it's a lot bigger than it should be. That's because I've been tinkering with this code. But can you see it's at 0.0, which is top left-hand corner? And if I go and have a look at the code, I'll show you how I broke it. If I go down here to load content, we'll find that I'll bet you that Robert's been tinkering with his code while he was asleep. And I've made it blue and half the width. So two of them across the screen. So if I can make it... There was a time when I was the only person in our household who knew what teal was. Because it was in Windows 3. It was a colour that... I never knew what teal was until I got Windows 3. And now it's really fashionable. My wife buys teal cardigans. And I go, oh, I know what colour that is. And she's not impressed at all. So this one will be a teal smudge across the screen. And there you go, that's teal, folks. It's like green, but not quite. I think it's the colour of a duck, but I may be wrong on that one as well. I have no idea. But saying your wife is the colour of a duck is not actually a plan. Actually, the worst question you can get asked in these kind of situations is, what do you think? The answer is... I think it's time I went somewhere else and cowered. And yeah. And there's several things I've learned, actually, in my career along these lines. The word actually is very dangerous, as in, actually, that's quite good. No. And the word nice is like plutonium. Don't say that's quite nice, because that doesn't mean anything. That just means tell me off for not agreeing with me. I digress. But you've seen a smudge. We can make it much smaller, a 20th the width, and run it up. And nobody's really impressed. I can tell that because nobody's clapped. And so we'll probably just have to move on at this point. There you go. It's there, and it's tiny. Right, fine. Stop that one, Rob, because there's a limit to how much fun you can get from drawing a single smudge on the screen. So let's go back to presentation. No, that's not presentation. That's my... Ooh, that's secret. Mustn't see that. Not till later, anyway. Right, okay, so we've drawn a smudge. We're happy. And everything in the garden is lovely. And we can crack on. That's boring. I want a whole bunch of smudges. I want to draw with them. Okay, is that hard? No. This is the next stage in making your game. Whatever you do, it'll work like this. You'll have loads of sprites on the screen, and you'll put them in something, and a list is a very good place to put them. So this is a list of iSprite values, and effectively, I'm going to make this thing, and when my game runs, I will add elements to the list. Now, any game you make which is 2D and sprite-based will work like this. We'll have like a play field, which will contain the game objects, and each time we do a draw, we'll do this kind of thing. We use a for each loop, we'll rattle through all the sprites, and we'll ask each one to draw itself. And this is rather nice OO-based design. And it will do whatever it needs to do to put itself on the screen. And it's as simple as that. Now, that's fine. I could start adding more sprites and stuff, but what I wanted to do now is get the user drawing with sprites, because that might be quite fun. And I'm doing this for fun. I've got no particular idea of where I'm going, but I'm making bits of code and having fun, and that works for me. So what I want to do now is just mention how to use the touchpad in the phone. And we basically, this is my initialize method, and the touchpad, this thing here, supports a whole bunch of gestures, and they come to you ready-wrapped, ready-packaged, but you have to turn them on first. And so this says to the hardware, okay, I want to track taps and free drag. So if the user taps the phone, I'll get that gesture. And if the user drags their finger around, I'll get that gesture. If I want to do pinch or flick or any one of another 10 or so different gestures, you can pick those up. You can do left hand, you can do drags in X or Y, so it ignores the other component. You can do all kinds of nice things. You can do double tap, which more a bit later. I've just turned on those two. And so now, in my program, I do this. This is happening in the update method 30 times a second. It says draw there. I must have written... Kids, don't do slides when you're drunk. Okay? This is what happens. That should say update. Each time I get a touch gesture, I add a new smudge. And so this thing here is a loop which spins while I've got gestures available. Read it off the touchpad. And then use the position to place my smudge on the screen. And that's all it does. And so, remember this thing here is a list. So each time we touch the screen, we get another sprite. And that's okay. So have we got a demo for that? Oh, we have, as a coincidence. So I'll go into here, and I'll just do a little bit of housekeeping. So let's go and do some drawing with smudges. How could that possibly go wrong? Don't ask. Don't want to go there. Right, so deploying to the emulator again, which is looks like my phone. Run it up. And I have this test, which I kind of call... Ooh. Yeah, let's not go for the device. Let's go for the emulator. We'll head for the real device a bit later on. But for now, let's just emulate. So there you go. I've turned it on its side. Here we go. So now I just go, wee, and I can draw with it. And that's quite nice, but a bit boring. And after I've scribbled for a while, that's all I can do. I have to stop the program. And so it's getting... We're doing things now. It's quite cute. And I'm sort of happy with that. Although I'd like to move on a bit. So let's move on a bit. Let's have a look at the next one. What I want you to see here is that I'm building stuff up out of a bunch of very simple behaviours, trying to head to somewhere which might be interesting. I can draw with smudges. I want to make... Let's make the sprite grow. That looks like fun. So I'm going to make a child class called Growing Sprite. This is basically built from Sprite, implements the interface, and it has a particular speed of growing. And this is where, once you've hired your graphic designer, You then go off and try and find some playtesters. Because the problem you have with making games is it's not like other stuff. Some of the numbers, you just won't know what's a good speed. What's a good speed for the enemies to chase you around the screen? I don't know. We'll have to play it and find out. And one of the things you end up doing is making it very easy to modify those values and then getting folk to play with the thing and tell you whether it's too easy or too hard or how to improve it. And so you end up wrapping this stuff round to make it work. I've just picked a value of 0.05, which kind of works and looks quite reasonable, but in certain game contexts it might need to be bigger than that, so maybe that should be a parameter to the constructor. I don't know. For now, it's just a number that I've slapped in there, which I'm going to just use. It's set when the sprite's constructed, and update uses it to make the scale bigger. And this is actually all I had to add to growing sprite. The rest of the behavior is picked up from the parent. And so now I've got a smudge growing technology, which is second to none. There's nobody is better at growing smudges than I am. But I won't put that on my CV, because it's not really that meaningful. So here we go. And there are some flaws with this program. I'm sure that one or two of you have already sort of spotted the fact we're going to have issues here when it starts running. Because, okay, here we go. When I start drawing, it all grows and swells up rather pleasingly. But after a while, I'm going to have a big red amorphous blob on the screen. Oh, okay, well that's... If you like big red blobs, that's fine. But the other thing is that after a while, it will chug a bit because the textures become quite large. And so, that's okay. But that's not. I would get my wife in and she would not be impressed by that. What's that for? It's used. What's that? I do this a lot. I spent ages making something. Come on, look at this. What do you do that for? Okay. That's probably what keeps me sane. So there you go. Well, sane-ish. Closer than other people sometimes. Still boring. Colours might be fun. Let's put some colours in. What I want to do now is I'm going to put in some code so that this is how we manage colours in XNA. There's a colour class. Spelt wrong, but I tried spelling it right and it wouldn't compile. Evil. And so I have a random number generator and I get three numbers between 0 and 255. Upper limits exclusive on the next call, and then I just whack them into my little helper method, give it a red, give it a green, give it a blue, give it a transparency of 255, which makes it opaque. Transparency is great in XNA. If I made that, say, about... Well, we'll try it in a minute, see what it does. So we've got that, and I can now play with my coloured smudges. And there's a phrase you didn't think you'd be hearing today. Or indeed ever. So here we go. This one, and now we've got a situation where the system is sufficiently complex for us to have fun twiddling with it. And that, by my guess, that's about 20 lines of code, maybe a bit more. So start it up and do some things. Come on, get going. Note to self, buy a faster computer. So now I draw with this. Here we go. Whee! And it sort of does all kinds of space-age stuff. Woo! And after a while, it starts to come out of the screen at you. I mean, it's coming towards me. Now, that's... There are tricks you can use to get fake perspective. And it's much, much easier to get the fake stuff than the real thing. And the idea that the human brain goes, oh, if a thing's getting bigger, it's going towards me, is one thing. Another thing are that... Do people watch Father Ted? There's a classic piece of Father Ted has this idiot assistant. And there's one classic piece of Father Ted where they're sitting in a caravan and Ted's got this little farmyard figure and he's going, small cow, close up, big cow, long way away. The other guy's going, oh, that's how it works. Yeah, small cow, close up. And no, okay, watch it. It's very funny. If you find it on whatever... The human brain is wired like that. So if you make things that are getting larger, they're coming towards you. If you have things that are moving, the large things go past quickly because they're close to you. And the smaller things go past slowly. That's parallax scrolling. And it's surprisingly effective. Let's play with this code and do some other things. Maybe I don't like the black background. So what I will do is I'll do two things. I'm going to change the transparency of the drawer to about 100. This is my colour picker. And I'm going to drop down here and change the background colour from this wonderful cornflower blue to white. And this will either work really well or do nothing. And I'm not, I must admit, I haven't tried this. I want to see what it does. So let's fire it up. It might be rubbish, it might not. I don't know. Whee! And so now it's sort of different but the same. And he said helpfully, now, you can, if you want to make smoke, this is how you make smoke. You make it much more transparent and start to fly off in different directions, of which more in a minute or two. But again, we're having fun, we're messing around with code, and at some point we might get something which I can use to impress Mary, but we're not quite there yet, so we'll keep travelling forwards. Forwards, that is, please, Robert. There you go. So we've got colour punch, and it's coming along. Now, I haven't got a game yet, and I've got another problem, which is if I have millions of smudges, the game performance dips through the floor. And so it is quite fun to steer the thing around the screen, though. So I added this piece of code, which I wasn't very pleased with. It has the air of a kludge about it, and a kludge is a thing I try to avoid. What I'm saying here is if I've got more than a certain number of smudges in my list, I'll get rid of the oldest one. And that's all that does. And it's not particularly... So when I add a new one, I'll kill an old one beyond a certain point. So my whatever I'm drawing will be now a particular length. If you're making a snake game, this is perfect for that. And as the snake gets longer, you just increase this value over time as the game progresses, so that the smudge's length increases. So you've now got... If you want to have a finger-powered snake, you've got one. So if you want to make a snake game where the user drives the snake around looking for food, it's very easy to do that. Because you just, your finger is the head of the snake, I'm moving it round and the back of it's sort of following round, and it all looks kind of impressive. And by clever use of colours, you can get some very nice effects by doing that. Okay? So, we've got a snake mechanic. We didn't think, that's not where we were going, but we've got one. The thing I don't, anyone, question for the audience. Oh my God, he's asking questions. Why is that not very nice code? Why would Robert be nervous about that? Yeah, right at the front. Sort of. Any other comments? If there's no entries, it might not work. I hadn't thought of that. But no, that'll never happen because smudge length is bigger than one. So that'll be okay. I mean, for me, the thing that would keep me awake at night... Do you know what keeps me awake at night? Insomnia. So... yeah. Right, after a while you start telegraphing them and you know the answer before I do. It's the fact that I am continuously creating new objects and throwing them away. I'm making work for the garbage man. When I get rid of that element there, it just disappears. And there's a little packet of memory which has got information about a sprite that will never get used again. So over time, these will build up and the garbage man will have to come in and throw them away. Now in C#, it happens automatically. On the phone... You have to worry about it a bit because the phone is resource constrained and it's not got unlimited power and massive numbers of processor cores and stuff. So maybe, just maybe, if I create millions of smudges and throw them away, my program, my game will stutter. And so that's the kind of thing that would make me a little concerned about this. You're right about the fact that the list is actually... a managed structure which will take effort to look after. But my experience with the .NET collection classes is they're actually really good. And you have to work extremely hard to outperform them. And generally, it isn't worth the effort. So here, my concern was, if we make thousands of these, we might notice that this thing is pausing to do garbage collection. My experience has been that that doesn't happen. And I'll show you a tool a bit later on, which you can use to watch for those kind of issues and deal with them when they occur. So that's all kind of nice, and I've got shorter smudges, and I can show you that, but I'll keep going forward because I want to show you my work in progress. I'm very proud of that. And so we'll go on, and it just has bits of smudges chasing around each other. Not very efficient code, but it works all right. And I tell my students, only worry about performance when it becomes a problem. Because they fret about the best way to order statements. and use temporary variables or not use temporary variables. And I say things like, look, that thing's got 3 gigahertz of power. It's not going to make any difference. For me, if I'm coding, the actual criteria I use is how easy is this to understand? Because I price my time far above the power to the computer's time. Every time customers come to me, if they say things like, this, your program is too slow, can you make it go faster? And I say, yes, if you give me £2,000, I'll make it go twice as fast. And they go, ooh, that sounds about right. So they give me £2,000. I go out and buy a £1,000 computer, which is twice the speed of their old one, and go, there you are, sunshine, and keep £1,000 for me. And if you can do that, then... I went to this really good lecture by a cryptographer from MI5, and he was talking about using individual photons to send data. And because of quantum effects, if you look at a photon, it changes. So there's no way you can eavesdrop on this. And he was talking about ciphers and codes, and he said, you give me £5 million and I'll crack any code you like. And we thought, well, how does he do that? He must be quite clever. And we said, okay, well, what do you do? He said, what I'll do is I'll go and find the person that's got the password and say, look, here's £3 million. And that's just an extension of the same thing. I mean, it works a treat. Back to the plot. Only worry about performance when you hit trouble. And use a profiling tool to find the bits you need to optimize. It's much more efficient to use your time to make the code easy to understand and the computer's time in the appropriate places. And this is my work in progress. And this just changes every time I show it, because whenever I show it each time, I've got a little bit further down the road. And here we go, work in progress. And what I... Oh, wrong one. I've added a whole bunch of... Oh, hello. I've got a nervous mouse finger now. That sounds very wrong as well. So if I fire this up, I've taken my Sprite class... And I've added lots and lots of new ones. I now have, first thing I have added, because it's very easy to do, is accelerometer support. So now, when the game starts, I make myself a new accelerometer. You can see it there on the screen. And then I bind an event handler to it, which will fire whenever I get a new reading from the accelerometer. Okay? And then I start it running. And when it fires, running in the background... It generates the event, and all the event does is it takes the acceleration value from the reading that's been passed into the arguments and lobs it into a variable that everybody can see. Okay? And all the sprites have got references back to their container game, so all the sprites are now aware of gravity and can use it, should they wish to. Okay? So having done that, I can then start making some sprites that actually do interesting things. And so I've actually got, that's my base class, that's fine. I've got a drifting sprite that drifts across the screen, going from left to right, or up to down, or whatever. You give it a direction, and off it goes. And you give it a direction and a speed, and away you go. I've got a bouncing sprite that does the same thing, but goes off the edges. And then I've taken a falling bouncing sprite, which is effectively adding gravity, so that it'll bounce off the edge when it hits it. And then I've got a falling drifting sprite, and I was making a chasing drifting, and I'm getting quite carried away with this by now. But the effects are quite interesting. Set it off and start it running. And thought it was interesting just to fire off. I can't remember where I got to, actually. So there you go. This is actually the sprites are falling down the screen. As I'm drawing the original ones and a whole bunch of other ones that fall down behind them. And if I show you another little trick, which is quite nice, in the emulator on the phone, you can see it's changed now. It's going a different way. If I tip the emulator, the actual behavior of these things changes as well. So I can tip it that way. And I've got this phone. I think this game has now been written to work in that mode. So now I can actually tip it and control where the things go. And I had this idea that what would happen is the system would draw something and then have another one underneath it, or you'd draw it and you'd have to tip the phone to line them up. Or you have to tip the phone to get all the red boxes in one side and the blue boxes in another side. And because each of these things has a different mass value, although they're all set to the same one at the moment, they could all fall at different speeds. So now I have a little puzzle game where the user has to do this, and I can detect where the sprites are easily enough. And so now I've got a tipping game. I could put points on the screen where the user has to roll the ball into, and all that kind of good stuff. And so there's a lot of potential here. One of the things you'll find, though, if you get into this in a big way, is that what you really want to have is some physics. Because physics adds a great deal to a game. And in that respect, well, I'll mention that one good trick you can play, I have to go and find the demonstrations for this. And here's a clue, Rob. They aren't in, are they in there? They are, okay. Presentations. This is one I did last time, which I'm very proud of, but I forgot to make a copy of. Ah, here we go. Bum, 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 bum. There we go. This is Destruction Golf. Now, remember those three thing games? I gave the students two words, destruction and golf, and said, make a game, please. And they went off. And just because I'm nice, I gave them a starting point, which is basically the Farseer physics engine bolted onto the sprites that you've already seen, pretty much. And if I fire this up, you'll see, get an idea for where I'm going with this. Now, I've just taken the fundamentals you've already seen and wrapped them around an openly available, it's on CodePlex, physics engine. And so now, I've got, wrong way up. How did that happen? I'll just flip you back, there you go. This is Destruction Golf. Now look at that. And this is why I say hire a graphics designer, okay? Because on the left we have the golf ball, and on the right we have the badly drawn house. And if I use the flick gesture, I can blow the house off the platform. That's pretty much perfect, but the idea is you'd knock the objects off the shelf and then move on to the next one, like a series of golf holes. And if I get it exactly right, I can make the ball stop on the shelf, but most of the time it rather infuriatingly does that and then resets. If I go a bit silly and do that, then the ball goes over the edge and flies and off into my texture, and it's the ball's still traveling. It's basically a work in progress, but if you want to add physics to your games, this stuff's all out there. Go to destructiongolf.com. You can download that, plug it in and make it go. All you need is the artwork, and now it's redrawn itself. And let's just try one more. It does get quite compulsive. That's looking good. No, it isn't. I need to put another fix. The way this works is there are three objects in this Farseer universe. There is the ball, a house, and a fixed shelf. And these things have got mass and friction and a point about which they rotate and all that kind of good stuff. And you can have all kinds of fun by playing with different weights and things. And this is on the back of a fair amount of twiddling and tuning. That's rubbish. And he goes, but it works on the phone, and it's a good starting point. And one of our students, Harry, took that and made a game from it and put it out in Marketplace. And he got 10,000 downloads in about a weekend. He gave it away for free. But it built his brand. He can now go along to game. He wants to be a game developer. He can go along and say, I've got a game out there, getting reasonable reviews. Take a look and get his phone out and show it off. And if you're that... Oh, quick question. Any students in the house? Any students here? Yeah, okay. Are you on DreamSpark? Yeah, DreamSpark, if you're a student, you should know about. It's basically free stuff, including membership of the Creators Club. So we can do all sorts. Now we can make the smudges chase your finger. We could add images from the camera. We could animate the sprites. We could make things rotate. We could have like a snake game. We could make a missile command game where you've got like clouds protecting your cities and you fire these things up and make the clouds and then the missiles come in. That's easy. Okay, you've got a bunch of fundamentals now you can take where you like. You could even have a thing where you use the microphone on the phone, pull in the audio sound, and then convert it to numbers and use that to animate the sprites. So you could like a voice-controlled, I don't know what. But it might be fun to play with. You're messing around with code, so you're having fun, whatever. Do not be afraid to push stuff out and see if anybody likes it. It's really interesting. It's actually quite sad as well, because it's amazing how rude people can be about things they've got for free. People will get a free download and then post horrible reviews of the thing, which they couldn't write and don't really understand. The best one was, have you seen these helicopters, the quadcopters, the Parrot drone? Have you seen those? It's a helicopter with four blades you can control with your iPad. And you tip the iPad and the thing flies on. It's great, okay? And the company that makes it put an app on App Store to download to control your helicopter. So it talks through Wi-Fi to the helicopter and you can fly it, okay? And when you download this thing, it says this app should only be used with the Parrot drone helicopter, okay? And they shipped it out there, and the first thing that happened was they got about 50 vitriolic reviews from people saying, I've put this thing on my iPad, it's rubbish. There's no helicopter, it doesn't fly, I can't see anything. Idiots. And depressing. And it's still, it's just, yeah, you'll get that. It's depressing. There's no editorial mechanism you can use to remove bad reviews on any of these things, which is very annoying as well. But just keep pushing stuff out. The only way to counter that is to encourage feedback, is to put nags in your apps. So after four or five goes, and you can count how many times they've started your program, you start saying things like, looks like you're enjoying using this, do you fancy giving it a review? And then in the phone, you can then run a chooser or a launcher across to the review page for the app. They can fill in there and then if they hit yes. So you can drive them to give you reviews. And that boosts the number of positives, because someone that's run the thing four or five times is probably going to have a positive opinion of it. So you're immediately removing the possibility of really bad ones. And after a while, you'll find that the really good ones will drive out those idiots that don't know when to buy a helicopter. Okay? And so do that kind of thing, but don't be afraid to put stuff out. I'll show you, I might show you Cheeselander, which is one of my first thing I ever shipped, which I'm actually charging money for. And once you've seen that, you'll have no compunction about releasing any old rubbish. Okay? It's a bit like that. So don't be afraid to push stuff out there and see what people think. In terms of getting market ready, I'll take you through the process and try and give you some ideas. And again, I'm going to go fairly quick, but these slides are all freely available to download and do what you like with. You can colour in all the O's if you like. I don't really mind. It takes ages, though, if you try that one. It's a long time. So if I want to find out where my phone application is spending all its time, then I will actually start off the performance analysis. And I run that from the debug menu, and I can look at either the running of the program in terms of execution, or I can look for its memory and resource usage. And this thing will make a big log file, which I can then take back out of the phone and analyze in studio. And it works on the device, and it works on the emitter as well. But the device is a better test in many ways. And when you run it, this is one of my... I haven't actually put this in my case. This is Funky Camera. Maybe I can show you Funky Camera working, since I feel like pushing the envelope a bit. What Funky Camera does is another one of these daft ideas. I had this cunning plan that if I do that, you can see this. And then I can hold the phone up like that, because I haven't got a... I forgot to ask for a doohickey so that I can see the big screen. I'll just get Funky Camera running, and you'll see very quickly what it does. It takes an image from the camera and funkifies it. And all it does is it works through, if you can see that, on the right-hand side is the funkified picture, and on the left-hand side is the non-funky one. And can you quite see? Can you see funky? Oh, this is really hard to do. If I look at that, can you see Funky Rob on the screen? No, you can't, can you? What am I doing? That's it. So that's my Funky Rob's chest. So move it up a bit, and that's Funky Rob's head. And on the right-hand side, it should be looking kind of funky. Yeah, it is thing. You get the idea. Right, all it does is add values to the red, the green, and the blue components of the video. And in my performance testing, which I just go back to and put full screen, you can see how the analysis tool tells me all this. In that what happens is that I start the program up, and the first thing it does is initialize the camera, so nothing much happens for a while. Suddenly then the whole thing goes nuts. That's my frame rate, and then that's my CPU loading. And the reason this bit is kind of funny colors is I've highlighted that bit for more detailed analysis later. I want to drill down to that part. For me, the good news is that, yeah, it's loading up, but I'm not getting below 30 frames, which is the warning point they tend to worry about. And garbage collection and memory-wise, I allocate some frame buffers, that's fine, and then I'm flat. And the garbage collection, there's been one there, and then one a bit further down, and so that's shippable. I'm not wasting memory. I'm well within performance constraints, so that can go out to marketplace as it is, and you can make your own little funky camera app and send it out there. You can get hold of the image stream from the camera very easily, and that means you can do things like augmented reality or all kinds of good stuff like that very, very easily. And it all just works. But this lets you find out where your trouble is and where you're having your issues with performance and all that kind of stuff. So that's the testing. You've seen it run. And now we're going to look at making an application. And there's a bit more detail here, which I'll take you through. When you ship an app to Windows Marketplace, you effectively give them a zap file, which is, it's a great name. I used to watch Batman TV shows and they used to hit people and it used to go zap. Maybe that was just me. Anyway, it's effectively an archive with a manifest. It's actually a zip archive. If you take it to bits, you'll find inside there's the manifest file. Oops, go back. Oh gosh, my buttons aren't working today. There you go. There's the image. There's two manifests and effectively the DLL and any assets you've put in there as well. And that's it. And there are the two little files which are manifest. This one effectively says, okay, these are all the components of the app. In this case, just one big DLL. And the second one is the very interesting one that you have to fiddle with. And again, the point I want to make here is this is really easy. You can put the application out in minutes. Just edit this file, and the first thing you say is, okay, these are the bits of the phone I want to use. Location, media library, phone dialer, push notifications, sensors, web browser, camera, contacts, appointments. That's the full lot. You pull out the ones you need. When the app gets shipped to the user's phone, it'll say, this application uses your address book or whatever. Is that okay? And you'll go, yes, that's fine. And then you'll approve it. This is how you mark your requirements for the app, okay? By default, the template has all of them. Knock out the ones you don't need. Otherwise, you're asking the users questions and they won't understand why it wants to use the camera if it's a music player or whatever. So do that. This is actually the second part that you have to fill in, which is effectively housekeeping, author name, version number, run type, and also whether it appears in the applications area or the games hub. And a bit of description as well. And this is, again, all in XML, and you can do it inside Studio. So you open Studio up, you find the files and solutions, bang this stuff in, and then you're good to go. And then you make some icons. Now, this is the point at which your tame graphics designer comes to the fore, because they've been working on these icons for ages. This is Rob's Red Nose Day game, which was an absolute smash. This is the most complicated and biggest game I've ever built. And shipped on the phone. I've fiddled with other ones, but it's basically a whole bunch of separate puzzles involving red noses. And you can download it for free and it works. And I made the icons the night before I shipped it, and it kind of shows. I should have worked a bit harder on them, but this is how they are. If you're serious about making a splash, spend some time on the iconography and the appeal. If you look in the marketplace, it's very obvious the ones that have had some professional design input and the ones that have been knocked out by the programmer just before he shipped the game. So work on that. Makes a big difference. Capturing screenshots is easy. You do that from the emulator. And the zap file itself lives in the bin folder. I'm looking in the wrong place. I'm looking in debug, which should really be in release. Rename it to zip and take a look if you like, but it's fairly boring stuff. It's basically your app all packaged and ready for sale. If you want to find out how to get it out there and stay legal, then there's a link there which you can follow to the guidelines for this, submission guidelines. And there are a couple of rules. You can't ship a program bigger than 20 megabytes over the air via 3G, and you can't ship a program bigger than 400 megabytes, full stop. And you're all going to go, but my game levels are much bigger than that. And I'll say no problem, because the application, when it runs, has access to what's called isolated storage, which is memory in the phone, which is stored in the basically in the main storage area. This phone's got 16 gig. Your app can write files into that. So the first thing your program does is go, okay, we have to go and download some game levels. And Windows Phone 7.5 provides a bunch of background loading tasks you can fire off, which will go and get those files for you while the user goes off and gets something else. So your program spins up, goes, first time you've run it, have to load the stuff down, come back in a few minutes, fires off its loading, and then the user gets on with something else, comes back, and it's all just happened as though by magic. Very easy to do that. Works very well. sharing them. You can push people your zap files and they can run them on their phones they've unlocked or their PC in the emulator. And that's the application that does it. Sits in the tools that you get free from Create. Obfuscation is very important. Students tell me that I obfuscate all my lectures. Okay. It's the technique of making things impossible to understand. If you're giving your code out to other people and it's got algorithms in there which you worked very hard to create, you don't want them to unpick it and take a look inside. Disassembling a .NET assembly is very, very easy. ILDASM will do it for free. There are decompilers on the web that will do an even better job. Okay? You don't want that. So you run the program through a thing that turns it into guacamole, changes the variable names, adds spurious bits of logic, doesn't affect the speed much, but makes it very hard for someone to unpick. And these are called obfuscators. One of the better ones is by a firm called Preemptive. And they used to have a very good deal for Windows Phone developers. That's now expired, but you can still get access to some of their toolchain if you follow that link. Okay? And these guys also do instrumentation as well. So you can effectively put elements into your program which push up to the web so you can track what your users are doing. This isn't a Silverlight talk, but if you are a Silverlight developer and want to make phone apps and track what the users are doing, you can even do that using, of all things, Google Analytics. And there's a toolkit for doing that. So you can get analytics reports on your apps, which is really interesting. If you spend ages making a particular option and then find nobody's using it, then either it's a stupid idea or your documentation needs looking at to promote that somehow. So all these things are all good. Oh, I have a tutorial. Oh, well. No, don't hear me. So there's a number of tools you can use to do that. Take it seriously. It's an important thing. You don't want to get caught out by people selling your code with their name on. Never a good thing. Marketplace is the place you ship your apps to consumer phones through. You have to actually do it this way. There's no side loading at all. It's all done through the marketplace. It's a very similar model to the one that iPhones use. Registered developers can unlock their own devices up to 3, and then you can effectively put whatever programs you like on here, which is kind of nice. To join, most important URL of the lot, createmsn.com. That's where you go. I can show you it now, if we're in the right context. This is my homepage. Most downloaded I've had over the last month or so is Play Music, which is my silly app, and it's had the most crashes as well, 406. And I know why that is, and I really must fix it. What Play Music does is it solves a problem I had with the Lumia. Brilliant phone. The voice response on Windows Phone is really, really good. They don't make a big fuss of it, but it works very well. You can dictate SMSs. It'll read things to you. What Play Music does is something that the phone won't do. In the phone, I can say start Zune, and it'll start the Zune program. But there's no command to make Zune play me some music. So what I did with my lunch hour coding session was I made a program called Play Music. And if I just hold down the speech thing here, start Play Music.
Starting Play Music.
And that'll play some music. And that's some air. And it basically runs for about 4 seconds and then kills itself. And there isn't an application on... Okay, it's very good to be quiet now. There's no application, there's no command on the phone that lets you do that. Okay? So I thought, why can't it do that? I'll make it do that. And I put the application together over my lunch hour and shipped it out. And that was that. And I've had 2,000 downloads so far this month, I think. I'm getting about a few hundred a day, which is nice. Rob's Red Nose Damon's had 7. And one person has bought Cheeselander, which is amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. And Tip Light was my other silly idea, which is effectively, it's a light that's controlled by the angle of the phone. So you can get different colours by tipping your phone. And that's all that does. And that's had several, that's had at least 1,000. I think there's... So these are historical, and that's my, as I'm going along, you can, there's my sort of how things are doing out there for me. But it's all good stuff, and the next version of Play Music will have an extra feature. I don't know whether you've spotted this one, but if you're actually listening to random play, and you hear a track you quite like, and you think, I've not heard that album for a while, I want to hear the album with that track in. And so you'll say, start Play More Music. and it'll find the current track, find the album, and start playing that. I thought it was quite a cute thing to do. And it's all voice. It's all basically leveraging this idea that with the voice command on the Windows phone, you can start a program running by giving its name. And that's all it does. It's very simple, works a treat. In terms of money is always useful, I've discovered, for buying gadgets, of course. Developers get 70% of the money, and once you hit the $200 threshold, when the money comes through, there's tax and things you have to pay. It comes from the States, which can be a bit of a pain, but there's some good how-tos on the web about how to sort of sort that out. And you can give away applications, you can sell applications, or you can create trial versions of paid apps as well. And you can make as many paid apps as you like, and you're capped at 100 free ones, which is quite a lot. The whole thing costs you $99 a year, which is the price of 1.5 video games, about that. And I would pay that just so I can put programs on my phone without the prospect of selling stuff. And again, I'm kind of like a strange case. So we'll gloss over that. In terms of selling, yep, you can do try before buy, and that's very easy to do in software terms. All we're doing here is we're getting hold of the license information for the application, checking the is-trial method. If that's true, I'm in trial mode, so I can have limited levels, I can have limited functionality, I have it time out, no save mode. Students, I see them and I say, have you shipped that game onto Marketplace yet? No, it isn't finished. What do you mean? We've only got two levels. Ship it. Because you can always release upgrades. And if you release two levels and get a really good response, then that'll drive you forward to make more of them. If you get a really bad response, it tells you you're wasting your time. And it gets you out there as soon as you can. So I'm a great believer in incrementally pushing out better and better and better versions. Don't wait till it's finished. I know how computer scientists' minds work. If we had our way, we'd never finish anything. Okay? There's always stuff you can do to make it better. One of Steve Jobs' best phrases was, real artists ship. And he's dead right. Get it out there. As soon as you're happy it behaves itself, get it out there. Because if it's brilliant, you're sitting there thinking, yeah, but it could do to be refactored. Will the user care? I think not. Get it out there. Okay? As soon as it's not actually dangerous, get it out there. What do you lose? Okay? So put stuff out there. And if you want to add features, then do that. But do it incrementally. You can have an upgrade policy driven by the files you've placed in ISO store. It isn't hard to do. So do it that way. In terms of submission, when you push your app up there, it'll be validated. They'll actually have a programmatic process that checks that everything's okay, and then a real, living, breathing human being will play your app game or use your app and pass comment on it. And they're checking against behavior in a set of scenarios, and you really will get specific feedback about what you've done wrong. I had a problem with Rob's Red Nose game, and they bounced it back, and they said, if you go to this menu and this menu and this menu and press the back button, you go to there, and you should go back to the previous one. And that's because I'd made it work how I thought was best, but it was against the way that the Windows Phone design guidelines say it should work. So they really are very good, and they will tell you what's wrong, and they'll take you through it, and then you resubmit, and everything in the garden is lovely, and you're back again. It takes can take up to 5 days. Longest I've done is five. Shortest has been one. It was really quick. That was for tip light, but tip light doesn't do much, which is probably not why it didn't take too long. So it'll come back, then you'll iterate around, and away you go. I'm going to short circuit this. There's a test kit built in the studio, and you just open that up, and it gives you a set of tabs which are the actual tests they perform on the app. And when these are updated, as they are every now and then by the Marketplace test team, Studio pulls down new descriptions and updates as well, all by itself, which is great. The first test is, have we got all the icons and images that we need? The second one is, do the capabilities match the code? Are we doing anything like self-modifying code or reflect or emit? Anything dodgy in there? Any unmanaged pointers? All bad. That'll get kicked out. And then you've got monitored tests and manual tests, each of which is described in detail, so you can work through these things and find out what your application does that's wrong and what's right. You can also use them as a way of looking into the context of what your error report tells you if it comes back. So this is all very useful and works very well. If you want to, rather than shipping your app out to the world, you can send it out to 100 close friends, if you have 100 close friends, which is nice. And they can test your app over 90 days, send you feedback. They get sent an email with a link in it. And great thing, I don't know how many folk know this. With Windows Phone, I can go on the web, browse to an app, click download, and it'll appear on my phone within about half an hour or so. You don't have to buy apps on the phone. So I can send people links which they can click on, takes them to the Windows Phone Marketplace, click on OK, that thing is then sent to their device. Okay? Really useful, very nice. So if you're promoting your application, you don't have to promote it on the phone platform. You can promote it via the web. And that's very powerful. So that's a useful thing to know. Keep moving forwards. Advertising, you can put adverts in there. Adverts are always good. They get the same income. 70% of it comes your way, and you can sign up for that, and you put the components in your game, and if the users click on them, they get through to a page that says call this number or visit this website, and away you go from there. Very easy to do, works quite well. Here are some good resources. XNA, we have the Game Studio website, MSDN. Sean Hargreaves does a very good blog. That's the Farseer Physics people who did the Destruction Golf stuff, and next page, that fancy make your screen look like your phone thing is the skin switcher, which you can get there. Little Watson's worth mentioning. When your program crashes, this is bad, okay? You can see the marketplace gives you crash reports. The reason why my program crashes, if you really want to know, it uses XNA, it writes the title of the music it's about to play, and by default, it doesn't have in XNA all the character sets enabled. So if you happen to find an album that contains a strange character, like an umlaut or whatever, my program tips over. It plays the music, but then the display actually goes away at that point. And all I have to do is change the character map in the XML that describes a font, and I'm fixed on that one. But the user has no... It still works for them. And so there have been no... Nobody's unhappy about that. It's just the way it is. Little Watson will take, when your application crashes, it'll write a file into the phone. Next time the user runs it, it comes up and says, very sorry, your app seems to have crashed last time. Do you want to log a report on this? And if they say yes, your program can then fill an email message with a stack trace, anything else you think might be useful, and they click the send button. That comes sent through to you, so now you can do two things. You can fix the bug, and you can apologize to the customer and build a relationship with them. And so if you do that properly, you're building a user base who is now engaged in helping you make the app better. So you should always try and put some kind of a mechanism in there to track bad things. And Little Watson on that URL will do it for you. Just drop the classes in there, put them into the hooks, and away you go. The other thing you should put on your apps as well, I would suggest, is a kill switch. Because if your app, God forbid, contains a horrendous bug that makes it unusable and causes it to lose data, then that's really bad. If you could put a file on the web somewhere with details of this that your application reads when it starts up, it could say, I'm very sorry, there's a problem with menu option 3, don't use this, we're working on a fix. Because remember, when it all goes wrong, you've got 5 days lag through Marketplace to put your fix out there. And that's 5 days of bad reviews and irate users. So think about that in the context of being able to actually tidy up and get out clean. Bottom things, yeah, Bill Simser, very good bunch of resources. And that's me at the bottom, robmiles.com, the best website in the universe and space. And I'm also on Twitter as Rob Miles. And finally, a non-too-subtle plug for my book, which doesn't come with crayons, although some say it probably should. If you're new to programming, it's a great book. If you're an experienced coder, I would suggest you look elsewhere. because it's actually for teaching programming. We've used it in schools and courses that we've done at the uni and places, and it's a way of teaching programming from first principles. So if you know what a do loop is, and a for loop, and a variable, and blah, 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 this book might not be for you. But if you want to, if you've got kids that want to learn how to play with programs and do stuff, might be worth a look. So please think in terms of doing that, okay? Bottom line for me is make stuff and have fun. When I was a student, the only way I could impress my family with my computing skills was printing out Snoopy calendars on the line printer. That's all I could do. I take it home, look, mum would go, that's nice, and put it on the kitchen wall. And that was it. Okay? You folk can take an idea, make it work, put it on a portable platform and sell it. I couldn't do any of that. So it's the best time. I get very cross because people say that artists and actors and directors and playwrights are all very creative and we aren't. And I hate that because I reckon computers and computer science is the most creative thing you can do. They can write plays about stuff. They can sing songs about stuff. We can take ideas and make them live. What do you rather have, a song about Facebook or Facebook? Okay? And they're all on Facebook with their iPads and their Macs and what have you, going, we're very creative, we're using whatever. We build that stuff. So please get out there, make stuff, and have fun. And if you get rich, cut me in. Okay? Thank you very much.